On this edition of the Iowa Business Report.
When you attend this and go to any of the receptions, you're going to run into a lot of different types of people in the industry, all looking to understand more about what you do.
The world comes to Des Moines for the annual Global Insurance Symposium. We'll have a preview. We're in the final weeks of the Iowa legislature. What's left to be done from a business standpoint? And in our business profile, we'll learn about a family-owned financial institution and how it has evolved over six decades. This is the Iowa Business Report for the first weekend of April 2024.
The Iowa Business Report is a copyrighted production of Totally Iowa Media, which is solely responsible for its content. For more, click on the radio programs button at totallyiowa.com. Here is Jeff Stein.
The Global Insurance Symposium takes place in Des Moines on April 16th and 17th. Aaron Pierce is co-chair of this year's event, which has grown tremendously over its 10-year history.
Our state has a tremendous history, really, when we look at the history of the industry and its formations through the early 1900s into today. I think a lot of that starts with the mutual company roots in the Midwest, and that's just continued to move forth and evolve to a place now where we just have a fantastic environment for business and a great place to be an insurance company in the state of Iowa.
How did GIS get started a decade ago?
GIS got started back when Nick Gerhart was the Iowa Insurance Commissioner. And I think that there were a number of very forward-thinking minds, leaders in the industry that came together at that time and saw an opportunity to capture on our incredible insurance heritage in the state and use that as a starting point to begin a thought leadership agenda where we would eventually have a conference to bring people together on an annual basis to get together and connect on an array of topics ranging from, you know, what's going on in finance to technology and how that converges with risk management.
Who attends?
Attendance is typically very diverse, and I think that's one of the great things about the conference. When you attend this and go to any of the receptions, you're going to run into a lot of different types of people in the industry, all looking to understand more about what you do. You know, we see a lot of CEOs, we see a lot of people in senior management. There's a heavy presence of regulators and attorneys, and also a lot of innovators. So, you know, you have tech companies that are looking to break into the market, better understand where insurance is headed next and how they can be a part of that. So it's a great diverse group.
Some 500 people from a variety of countries. It's certainly not just based in Iowa or the Midwest.
Definitely not. And I think that's one of the things that we've done a great job of in the last 10 years of staying true to is keeping a more global, multifaceted lens on how we plan content, the topics that come in, and in turn, that's why you get that sort of attendance.
Your theme this year is navigating a new frontier of risk. That suggests that you're going to be looking at some of these topics that have some of us shaking our heads because we just don't know where it's going or how we're going to grab a hold of it, but it's not going away. And I'm thinking of these technology-based changes.
I'll tell you what, I feel like you were at the planning meeting a year ago when we were discussing theme. That's exactly it to a T. And there's certainly a lot going on anymore in the technology space. We have increased interest in use and adoption of AI. Obviously, when you look at the role technology plays in insurance, it's been with us for a long time. You also have ongoing discussions around climate risk and new concepts in financial products and services. What are going to be the needs of the future for an aging population? All of these things represent new frontiers in how participants in the industry should start probably thinking and asking questions.
And again, the concept of risk for a consumer, you think of the return, in essence. You get insurance because if you have a claim, then you are made whole or as close as can be. But from the other side of it, the focus is risk, and the whole insurance system fails if you've not adequately assessed risk, correct? I mean, that's why this is such a key component.
Absolutely. The way I would explain that, and often my staff, when we talk about it, any layer of the risk transfer process, right? Because it starts with the buyer to the insurer and then to the reinsurer and perhaps beyond that. But at every layer in that process, you want to mark to market. And so you need to understand the risk that you're looking to transfer, whether it's financial or relates to the cost of healthcare or insuring your home or your boat, understanding that risk, pricing it appropriately with the right coverages that have value and meaning for the buyer, and then structuring every layer of the financial transaction in an appropriate way with terms that reflect reality. That's really essential. If that doesn't happen, you're absolutely right. There can be problems.
What are some of the key issues facing the industry these days? Obviously, the proper assessment of risk and these new factors are changing everything. But broadly speaking, what are some of the challenges you and others in the industry are looking at? And perhaps those are opportunities as well.
there are definitely opportunities. And the neat thing is, and when you look at the agenda for the conference, it really starts with looking at what type of insurance you're talking about. So in the property and casualty space, right, that's going to be your homeowners, your auto owners, your business insurance, looking at things like how to better understand climate risk, although I would suggest that affects really anybody and everybody in a lot of ways, but better understanding how to manage property risk, collaborate with local partners and regulators, that's a critical issue. AI, critical issue. Looking in the life and health space, obviously continued interest in ways that technology can bring about better opportunities for wellness, which is good for both the consumer and the carrier alike. In the future of financial products and how that integrates into retirements that are going on a lot longer than what they were 50 years ago. People are living longer, and that's wonderful, but we have to make sure we have companies and innovators ready to meet the challenge of bringing security with that longer lifespan. So I'd say that that's kind of a good spectrum of issues. Around that too, we also have some content just related to general global security and financial conditions. At the end of the day, we're all a part of that bigger narrative, and the carriers and companies in the insurance industry are a part of that too, so we have an interest there.
You have a number of sessions, lots of panels, folks from around the world, as you know. Are there some keynote speakers or certain individuals of note that will be speaking across all sessions as opposed to breakouts?
Well, I think we have two in particular that I'm very excited about this year. First is Matt Popoli from Bain Capital. He's going to be presenting on the interplay of financial risk in the insurance industry. This is becoming a very important thing, as we've seen with the narrative in the last 5 years on how the economy has performed, especially coming out of COVID. The more we can better understand the dynamics of what investment markets are going to do in line with consumer expectation and capabilities, the better off we're going to be. And Matt's going to do an amazing job. Obviously, Bain's a tremendous firm, great partner to the industry, but we're excited to have him. And then on day two, we actually have a very unique opportunity to hear from Lieutenant Colonel Mark Evans from the U.S. Army War College. This will be more of a geopolitical risk presentation, but I think, you know, if any of us pay attention to the news for 5 minutes on a daily basis, a lot going on in that space, and everything that happens, even in places like Ukraine, has an effect on the insurance industry. And so that's going to be a great topic as well.
There's also a student component I see by looking at globalinsurancesymposium.com. Not only is that probably gratifying because it shows the future of the industry, but it also exposes those individuals to this unique experience. Tell us how the students are involved.
This is such a neat thing. So every year for the past couple of years, we've been doing a student case competition. What this is we create a case study problem that students in undergraduate studies from different schools around the country form teams and then try to attack the problem and come up with a solution that they think makes sense. They then submit that, and there's an evaluation process with some judges out of the industry. And then they come and present their solutions over the lunch hour one day. This is a really popular part of the event, and the things that we see from these kids, just amazing.
And as I said, it's got to be rewarding or gratifying to see that there's that interest. But that's also, I suppose, going to give new life to existing organizations because, you know, I've got several years on you. But when you see new people come in, they're not afraid of some of these challenges that I suggested. Some of us just don't know what to adapt. They're digital natives times 10.
I'd have to agree, especially just on the both identifying, connecting, and engaging with talent for the future. When these students, when these young adults, frankly, complete this project, they are already years ahead of knowledge in terms of the industry and the way that they can apply all sorts of different business and technology skill sets and frameworks. So it's amazing to see them apply that. They just do a great job.
Aaron Pierce is co-chair of the 10th Annual Global Insurance Symposium, to be held in Des Moines April 16th and 17th. For more information, go to globalinsurancesymposium.com. We connected via Zoom on Thursday, March 28th. Still to come, legislative to-do list and 6 decades of an evolving family-owned business. You're listening to the Iowa Business Report. The Iowa Soybean Association celebrates National Soy Foods Month this April. Did you know foods containing soy protein provide 9 essential amino acids and reduce the risk for heart disease? Foods made from soybeans, such as edamame, tofu, and soy milk, are packed with fiber, iron, and zinc. Create a healthy lifestyle while supporting Iowa farmers by consuming more soy-based foods. Brought to you by the Iowa Soybean Association, powered by the Soybean Checkoff, celebrating 60 years of moving the industry forward. Welcome back to the Iowa Business Report. I'm Jeff Stein. April 16th marks the 100th calendar day of this session of the Iowa General Assembly. That's the day payment of per diem expenses ends for lawmakers. So not surprisingly, that's often the target date for adjournment. But before they close the two-session 90th Iowa General Assembly, Joe Murphy of the Iowa Business Council has a list of things for legislators to consider.
There's a lot that still needs to be decided with respect to the legislative session. You know, we're still watching the different proposals regarding tax reform. There's not been a lot of progress, at least publicly, on the various proposals. The governor has a proposal herself. Legislative branch has really come together between the two chambers and offered sort of a different approach. The good news, I think, for Iowans is that they all cut taxes. They all cut taxes in a different way, which will allow individuals and businesses to benefit from that, allowing them to invest in themselves, their family, or their companies, which I think is a really important point to make. There's other things as well. There's some housing policy that we're looking at that hasn't been resolved. There's the mega site bill, the major economic growth attraction bill that was passed in a strong bipartisan vote just a couple of weeks ago in the House, 89 yeses to only 4 opposed. So the Senate has some cleanup work to do there just to kind of literally just pass that and send that down to the governor. But all of this takes time. The Revenue Estimating Committee met just about 2 weeks ago and projected another solid foundation for Iowa's finances, down about 2% from the previous estimate, but again, well within the budget of the current fiscal year and even the next fiscal year that we're looking at, factoring in all of these different tax cuts that they're talking about. So there's a lot to be decided yet, but I think the good news is that there's a lot that can still be done. And now we just sort of have to come together and get this done here moving forward.
The Iowa Business Council released its quarterly member survey data this past week. We'll review the positive outlook in detail on this program next week. Coming up, banking and more. You're listening to the Iowa Business Report.
Hello, Iowa. This is Michael Swanger, owner and publisher of Iowa History Journal. Spring has sprung, and so has our March-April issue that is packed with great stories. From the Battle of Shiloh to Bob Feller's opening day no-hitter to Great Depression-era riders at Iowa State and renovations to the State Historical Building and more, pick up Iowa History Journal at Hy-Vee, Barnes & Noble, Walmart, Books A Million, and other outlets. Better yet, subscribe so that you don't miss an issue. Visit iowahistoryjournal.com and order today.
Welcome back to the Iowa Business Report. I'm Jeff Stein. Security National Bank has been based in the Omaha Council Bluffs area for some 6 decades. Doug Oldacre has been in banking for 4 decades, now serving as Executive Vice President of the bank, with particular focus on the Private Client Services Division.
Security National Bank, we have a national charter which allows us to operate in all states across the United States. Even though we have a national charter, we consider ourselves to be a community bank, meaning we're much smaller compared to some of our money center banks. The bank was chartered in September of 1964 in Omaha, Nebraska, as a typical community bank, family-owned in 1964, still family owned today by the Landon family all these years later. We have expanded our presence, though, to the Des Moines, Iowa market, as well as the Dallas, Texas market, beyond now just our Omaha, Nebraska market. We started in Omaha really as a depository or deposit gathering institution, like all banks do, and a commercial lending bank. We have grown since then to encompass a lot more additional services just beyond the traditional banking, lending, and deposit gathering to offer now what we call private client services. That would include private banking, trust and estate administration, wealth management, 401ks, IRAs, things of that nature. So our service model has really expanded over those 60 years, as has our market now between really 3 states. As compared to just or contrasted to just the Omaha, Nebraska Council Bluffs market back in the 1960s.
That's not uncommon, is it? As I think about financial institutions, what I'll call my hometown bank, et cetera, over the course of the last 30, 40 years, they've provided more services in response to customer demand. whether it's insurance, whether it's the private client services you mentioned. That's not an uncommon evolution in the industry, is it?
It's not uncommon. In fact, we've had to learn to do that in order to compete with the much larger institutions. We think our advantage is our size and the focus that we have on our client relationships. Everyone says that, though, don't they, Jeff? Everyone says we're focused on the client, or we're client-facing or client-focused. The proof is really in the pudding. You've got to get with an institution, kick the tires a little bit, see if the marketing buzz that they tell you about their relationship-focused product offering is really there or not. But we would certainly encourage anyone looking for a good financial services partner to keep that in mind. Due to technology and just innovations in general, community banks like ours can now offer virtually any product or any service that our big national competitors provide. So if we're going to survive in this market, how do we do that? It's got to be through customer relationships. What we're really focused on.
You mentioned technology a moment ago, and it does not come cheap, the most basic technology, but then when you put in place the technology that's needed within a financial institution, because you're a prime target, I would trust, for nefarious actors as opposed to a private individual's email account. You've got a lot more there for them to go after, and the folks at Security National Bank have expended a fair amount of capital to protect the customer base from this technological invasion.
Just the sheer number of actual attacks. I might say attempted, because more times than not, we're able to not get entrapped in some of those. I think we get hundreds, if not thousands, a day from nefarious bad actors. It's hard for me, Jeff, to keep up on the newest and greatest trend in trying to break security protocol and access client information. It's not just our bank. It's just rampant through the financial services industry in particular. Why? That's where the money is, you know? But it is a constant battle staying up with the newest attacks, how to fight those attacks, most importantly, how to educate our teammates to not fall victim to those. Because even today, with the increase in volume of these attacks on all of our financial institutions from bad actors, the key link in almost every single one of them is your staff clicking on a link or doing something that allows a bad actor to be able to access your systems and thereby gain access to your client information. We put technological advancements in place, but even more important than that is educating your staff on how to conduct their day-to-day affairs inside the organization so as to not get trapped into one of those scenarios. It's exhausting, I got to tell you.
You also, though, have to make it easily accessible for a customer. And again, so much of the banking or financial transfers that we do as individuals these days, we do them not by walking up to a teller at a window, which some of us still prefer, frankly, but we're doing it at home at night. We're doing it on the computer. It's after hours. So you have to have a whole infrastructure in place to allow that to be not only safe, but a seamless, easy experience, because nobody wants to waste the time with a screen that says that something could not be completed.
Boy, isn't that the trick? We have to have security protocols in place, but we also have to make the accessibility of that client information easier and easier, it seems like, almost every day to satisfy ongoing customer demands. As you said, Jeff, the number of people entering our branch locations declining every day. They want to access their information online, on a mobile application. Almost invariably, there will be a time when even a younger person will need to access a personal banker for some reason. And we have to be prepared to provide our service that way as well. Technology today, though, is really, really expensive. And what we often see with community banks or financial services providers of our size is the fear or the reluctance to spend on technology because, quote unquote, we can't afford it. Number one, consumers demand it. But number two, who's also demanding technology today, are your employees. Look, employees have opportunities to go X, Y, and Z employer, and they expect when they come into an office that you're going to have the latest, and you don't necessarily need to be bleeding front, you know, technology, but you can't be behind either. And so to attract the highest caliber of employees that are going to be with you for a long period of time, you also have to think about them and what are their expectations as they come into work. We just added a significant upgrade to technology in our trust and wealth area in 2023 with a conversion in October. Tell you the expense associated with not only the conversion itself, but the ongoing use of the technology is significantly more expensive than our earlier provider. However, having just gone through that, we were able to secure the largest relationship in my history with a institutional client as opposed to an individual like you and I that we would not have been able to capture without the embedded improvement, if you will, in the technology spend that we did in 2023. So don't be afraid of technology. Embrace it. Embrace it for your consumer. Embrace it for your employee. Embrace it for a 20-year run that you're likely going to have. And don't be afraid to spend.
Doug Oldacre, Executive Vice President of Security National Bank. More online at snbconnect.com. We connected via Zoom on Thursday, April 4th. And that brings us to the close of this week's program. We're back again next week at this same time. In the meantime, you can listen to all or part of today's program by going to totallyiowa.com and clicking on the radio programs link. And we're also found on all the major podcast distributors, 19 now in all with the recent addition of YouTube podcasts. Support for the Iowa Business Report comes from the Iowa Business Council, a nonpartisan nonprofit organization working to elevate Iowa's economy through leadership, research, and advocacy. Learn more and review the group's Iowa Competitive Dashboard by going to iowabusinesscouncil.org. We welcome your comments. Send them by email to radio@totallyiowa.com. I'm Jeff Stein. Thank you for joining us, and we hope you have a prosperous week.
The Iowa Business Report is a copyrighted production of Totally Iowa Media, which is solely responsible for its content. For more, click on the radio programs button at totallyiowa.com.